Okay, into the mic. Hi, everybody. Thank you all for being here. Thank you, Joan. Thank you, Chris. Thank you, White Whale. And I'm sorry to Kayla's grandmother for what I'm about to do. This is an excerpt from my forthcoming memoir, which will be out in this fall, called They Write Your Name in the Brain of Rice. And this is a little excerpt from the book. The book is, in theory, a cancer memoir, but it's mostly about waiting for a diagnosis. You know, that moment where you're waiting and you're waiting for news. And everything here is written in vignettes, and it's kind of a stream of consciousness. And there are some words in here that Kayla's going to make, but Jimmy would. So cool. Love Jimmy. All right, this is called Your One Phone Call. I'm eating a Greek salad at Panera when my phone rings. I don't usually pick up, but it's been a week since my biopsy, and I'm still sore, and my right boob is bruised, black and yellow, and I've been waiting days that have stretched on like 600 miles of bad road. My boob looks like Gorbachev's forehead. My boob looks like an ink blot. Who's Gorbachev? My daughter, my Gen Zer, says. I say, he tore down the Berlin Wall, sort of. There are bits of the Berlin Wall on display in Ocean City, Maryland, in Ripley's Believe It or Not. I have pictures of my daughter there in front of the graffiti bits written in English, don't go with the flow and move with the groove. Rainbows, rainbows, in whatever language, rainbows mean hope. Gorbachev's forehead birthmark used to be called a port wine stain. Many people had these when I was growing up, though I never see them now. Doctors, genetics, evolution, who knows? In Gorbachev's forehead, I see a map of a small country that looks like it's melting or crying, maybe. I believe in the cosmos, Gorbachev said when asked about his religious beliefs. All of us are linked to the cosmos. Rorschach, the father of inkblots, died at 37, precisely 18 years younger than I am now. It's funny the things I think about lately. It's funny the kind of math I do when I usually shudder away all things now. Did you know that Rorschach looked like Brad Pitt? Brad Pitt and Rorschach looked like Father Mike from St. Regis. They all had amazing hair. Do you remember that Brad Pitt was once married to Gwyneth Paltrow? Gwyneth Paltrow has a lot of ideas about hair and salads, self-care, and conscious uncoupling. Her company, Goop, sells a $3,490 solid gold dildo called Olga and a candle scented like Gwyneth's vagina. Gwyneth Paltrow's vagina candle with hints of bergamot costs $75. It's often sold out and on back order. Years ago, when I lived in New York, I saw Brad Pitt on the street scooping poop from a snippy little dog that I think was Gwyneth's. What the hell was wrong with you back then, Brad Pitt? All 10 of Rorschach's images look like vaginas and ovaries and pelvises. A few of them look like bunnies fighting. Another looks like the Grecian urn, beauty is truth, truth beauty. Brad Pitt played the Greek hero Achilles in the movie Troy. On camera, Brad Pitt looks immortal, lit through with gold. On the street in New York, Brad Pitt looked ordinary. Another New Yorker scooping poop. Cute, kind, human, connected to us all through the cosmos. My phone rings three times before I pick it up. Truth, beauty, beauty, truth. Those Greek figures chasing each other around that vase, stalling for eternity. I love that word, stalling. It's tiny, but clever, the way the vowels and consonants melt and stick like peanut butter in your mouth. Stalling, stalling. Try it. The word does what it says. Isn't language magic? See what I mean? My phone's ringtone is the sound of typewriter keys. A while back at the London Times, editors pumped the sound of typewriters into the newsroom, a subliminal thing. The sound of typewriters, even for people who grew up without them, gets writers excited. The words come faster. The pages fill up. Good for deadlines. Good for profits. Writers pumped up on adrenaline and typewriter sounds move stories forward. This is, I finally say to the voice on the phone who asks to speak with me. I spear an olive into my mouth. My boob is a storm cloud. My boob hurts so much. Up until this phone call, I've been making jokes about my ink-black boob. These jokes make people other than Newman uncomfortable. Newman, my husband, has dubbed my 3D biopsy breast Frankenboob. Pitchforks, fire bad, he says and waves his arms. And I can't stop cracking Rorschach jokes. Tell me what you see, I say, and push my boob close to his face. My mother never breastfed me, he said. I've heard that, I say. At least they didn't stab you in the ass, Newman says, and grabs my ass hard enough to bruise that, too. My ass is not the same as it was when we got married at a discount wedding chapel in Vegas. I never appreciated it back then, or that I could get away with wearing a white bikini at the pool during our honeymoon at Circus Circus. It's been a few years since I've donned a bathing suit or asked for lights on during sex, but my husband makes me feel beautiful. Under Mikhail Gorbachev, the former Soviet Union practiced a policy called glasnost, a lovely word, which means openness and transparency. Truth. Truth. I am grateful for this life. I expect this new call from the oncology nurse to tell me everything is fine. It was just a scare, and I should expect another 20 years of love and ass grabbing and jokes about fire and angry villagers. Can you speak up, please, I say. The nurse's voice sounds muffled, like someone is holding a pillow between us. Can you speak up, please, I say again. I want to say, oh, come on. I want to say, we've been through this. Like, I have no idea if this oncology nurse is the same oncology nurse or the same oncology nurse I talked to the last times around. So many doctors, so many nurses. I spear another olive and think how much I love olives and nurses. I'm thinking of a nurse who is not the nurse on the phone. I'm thinking of a nurse with beautiful tattoos, the names of her children, some flowering vines. During one of my cancer screenings, this nurse I'm thinking of ran tests on me, and somehow we started talking about shaving our pussies. I knew this stripper once, the nurse said. She told me a trick, a little toner, antibiotic cream, and boom, no more bumps. I was at a strip club once in New Orleans. It was called Big Daddy's. Animatronic legs high-kicked over Big Daddy's entrance. The legs wore thigh highs and red high heels. The bouncer who perched on a stool beneath the legs was a large woman with a buzz cut and black gauges the size of quarters in her ears. I loved and feared her from the start. Inside, a beer was $12. The wallpaper was worn red velvet, and everything smelled a little dank, moldy, like wet cigarette butts on the beach after high tide. Newman and I sat next to the stage while strippers swizzled around a pole. The stripper had tattoos of flames all around her pussy. The stripper wore shoes I would never stand in, let alone dance or swirl a pole in. She had a cesarean scar, like my cesarean scar, pink, jagged, Frankenstein stitchery peeping out from all the flames. That looks like it hurt, my husband said, friendly, making small talk like he does. He meant the tattoo, which stretched from the stripper's pussy to her ass. It was impressive, really, intricate art, all those vibrant reds and oranges and yellows. I can't imagine how long that took. I assume the procedure was clinical, the stripper lying on an exam table, legs in stirrups, the tattoo artist with a headlamp on, the kind gynecologists and dentists and cartoon coal miners wear. The stripper, obviously a mother, probably sweet off stage, or at least someone who might be a friend, said, why, you want to touch it? And her voice was a razor, mean, and touching at strip clubs, even I knew, is always off limits. She said it like she'd love to call in the bouncer, who was built like a pork chop, who knew karate or jujitsu probably, who knew how to make people not touch each other, ever, no matter why, no matter how lonely or curious or lost. I drank my $12 beer. It was skunked. The mandatory second beer, that was skunked too. The strip club visit was supposed to be fun and sexy. It wasn't. When my sweet nurse said boom, she did that karate chop thing professional wrestlers do, hands to the crotch, suck it, delete, That's life-changing, I said about her tips for razor bumps. The nurse said, I know, and she chopped again. And we laughed and chatted and pulled our pants down to compare C-section scars and razor burns. We whined about bathing suits and what the hell, why should we care at our age? Lucky to be alive, lucky to get to the beach now and then. That last part, I stole from a line from Gerald Stern's great poem, Lucky Life. Some poems live inside me, strands of DNA I can point to and name. I want to tell the oncology nurse on the phone about my friend, the nurse with the beautiful tattoos and no razor burn. I want to talk about my love of nurses in general, because the nurse on the phone sounds so awkward and I want her to be okay, because I'm pretty sure I'm okay. No need for this ongoing strangeness between us. I want to tell her my mother was a nurse and that people called my mother Sarge because she wouldn't take any nonsense. I want to tell her Sarge was kind too, and how when I was a child in the hospital, my mother, Sarge, the nurse, slept on a cot next to my bed and worked double shifts so she could be with me. Such is the love of a mother who is also a nurse. I'm sorry, the oncology nurse on the phone says, and I'm confused. I think I ask her name, and maybe she tells me, but I forget it right away, even though I try so hard not to do that. Names connect us to each other. Names remind us that we're human. Knowing someone's name changes things. It's harder to be cruel. It's harder to lie. When I sense awkwardness, when I feel other people's discomfort, I fill up the space between us with words. I talk. I keep talking. You may have noticed this. Indulgence. Thank you for your patience. All these typewriters in my mind. The nurse on the phone, whose name I don't know, says sorry again and more pillowy things. I stop talking and stop eating and look at my salad, all these extra olives. Panera usually skimps on olives, so these olives are their own miracles. A love or hate of olives is, scientists say, genetic. So is a love or hate of cilantro. Some people think cilantro tastes like lime. Other people think it tastes like soap. I love olives. I love cilantro. Nature over nurture, sometimes even on our tongues. I love my mother, Sarge, the mother who raised me. She loved olives too. What my birth mother loves, I have no idea. Nature over nurture feels like a lie, a betrayal at least. After my daughter was born, I found my birth mother through Catholic Charities. I wanted a family medical history for my children, I said. History of cancer, history of heart disease, history of mental illness. My birth mother, whose name I know, refused. Instead, she wished me dead. My birth mother has never called me by my name, neither the name she gave me nor the ones my parents gave me. By keeping me nameless, she allows herself a necessary distance, professional, cool. She can protect her own heart, and I understand. By keeping me nameless, my birth mother allows herself the space to be cruel. That part, I understand less. As I write this, my birth mother is still alive, and my mother is not. Cancer. If I had to choose, I'd choose nurture over nature every time. In a booth across from me, a mother feeds her tiny daughter something that looks like pudding. The girl, strapped into a high chair, doesn't like being locked down, so she bobs and weaves, and a sprig of blonde hair ponytailed on top of her head burbles like a fountain. Something to wish on. In Rome, I threw coins into a fountain. I've thrown coins into fountains in Paris, in Belgium, into a sad koi pond in the Rogo Mall. The fish in that koi pond died, I think, partly from all the coins and empty Orange Julius cups and the cigarette butts people threw in there. Poor sweet fish, all that filthy water, all those wishes. Monroeville Mall. My home country, country of Dawn of the Dead, which was filmed there, Monroeville, Pennsylvania, the birthplace of zombies. Help me, the little girl says, and her voice pops like bubble wrap. Her mother says, shush now, you're fine, and spoons more pudding. The nurse, who is nameless, tries twice to pronounce my name. Close enough, no worries, I say. I say it rhymes with tequila, but without the worm. Funny, funny, always that. Everything's a joke to you, my father used to say to me, you jackass. The nurse on the phone doesn't laugh. Help, the little girl dodging the spoon says. Shush now, you're fine, her mother says. I'm sorry, the nurse says. Again, again. In Spain, there's a version of Panera called Pan Pan. Meat and cheese and bread. Everything a person needs to go on living. My first time in Spain and my second time and my third time, I lived at Pan Pan. I knew what to order. Carne, queso, pan. I knew the order of things. The little girl in her high chair sounds far away, her cries muffled by the pudding. The nurse says again, I'm sorry. The nurse says there's a malignancy. I somehow ignore her. At Pan Pan, the bread was pillowy, a cloud, la nube, bread and cheese, staples, all a person needs in this life. The nurse says, I am very, very sorry. I think when people talk about leaving their bodies, near-death experiences, this is how it might feel, the untethering. La nube, lo siento, the cloud, I'm sorry. One phone call like this. Shush now, the little girl's mother says. You're scaring people. Stop scaring people, a doctor who wrote to me said. I miss my mother. The nurse does not say cancer. She says malignancy. When I was a flight attendant in my other life, we were trained to call storms, weather, and turbulence rough air and a crash a hard landing. A bomb threat was an incident, and a hijacking was a trip. A drink was a beverage, no matter how weak or strong. Never drink coffee or hot tea on an airplane. The water used for coffee and tea comes from the same source as the water used in the toilets. Planes are limited. The ice is suspect too. Maybe everything on a plane, in the air, on the ground causes cancer. And yet every profession has a language meant to keep people calm. Every profession has its own language of kindness to protect people from panic and pain, to keep people believing that we are forever tethered to this world. In what world does the word malignancy sound better than cancer? Ours maybe? More syllables at least. Do you want to touch it? The stripper in New Orleans asked my husband. She spread her pussy like a map. Then she pulled back, stomped a heel off the ledge of the stage, and knocked my second $12 Heineken to the ground. Gwyneth Paltrow was on my flight once. Gwyneth fake gagged and threatened everyone and required oxygen because she thought her first class vegetarian meal may have nestled against her seatmate's prime rib. Malignant, malignancy. Gwyneth, who friends call Gwynny, fanned her face like she was on fire. She stuck out her pretty pink tongue so I could check it for poison. Gwyneth's lovely baby butt complexion slotched over as her anger flared. Her seatmate, his meat bleeding a little, looked mortified. Their meals never touched, I swear. Whatever, Gwyneth Paltrow, you beautiful, rich creep. May you live forever, even so. Thank you.